Welcome back to the Dungeon Master's Block, the place where we focus on the Dungeon Master, the most important person in the game, the only person capable of playing God, killing characters, and lowering the ego of all of the people at the table. I'm one of your hosts, DM Neil, aka Jopemaniac.
And I am DM Ian.
Yes, and we are together for the first time.
Yes.
And it will hopefully be amazing.
I'm hoping so. Today, we're going to be talking about Dragonborn. We are returning to our series, Racial Profiling. So it's going to be a great discussion, I think, on Dragonborn, and we're going to have a lot of fun. But before we do that, let's head into some iTunes reviews.
And the first one up is from King Rivers, but I want to call him King Rivers because it sounds like an NPC name at that point. And that is titled Most Helpful Podcast I've Listened To. So stop now. Don't listen to any other podcasts. We just want to leave that where it is.
Yes.
It's a 5-star review. This is a really amazing podcast. I'm a new DM, literally 2 sessions, and this podcast has really helped me get going and create some pretty cool things. So thank you for making this podcast. Well, thank you for liking our podcast and taking inspiration from it.
And thanks for taking the time to actually write a review.
Yes.
Yay. Our next review is by none other than the very self-same food mage, Savory DM, entitled Fantastic, and it is also 5 stars. He says, I love the energy. The DM finally has a place to hang his heavy cloak. Informative and entertaining, learned a bit, got a refresher on what I forgot, and my creative muse sings along when I listen. Great job, Savory DM.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, let's head to the meat.
I'm starving. We ain't had nothing but maggoty bread for 3 stinking days.
Why can't we have some meat?
Looks like meat back on the menu, boys.
Like DM Ian said, we're going to be talking about the Dragonborn, which you can thank one of my players, Trevor, for giving me the inspiration to bring this up as the next race that we should talk about. So, hey, great job, Trevor.
Awesome.
And speaking of inspiration, we did some research to try and figure out where did the Dragonborn come from in historical settings. And I'm not going to lie, that was much more difficult than I thought it was going to be. A lot of the races seem to have tiebacks deep, deep into history where you can pretty much see like, oh, that's a goblin or oh, that's a troll. I mean, even those terms have historical references. The Dragonborn, on the other hand, not so much. So the only places I really found it were in ancient Greece and Chinese mythology. In the ancient Greek legends, there were called the Drakina or the Drakina. And it was more of like a mermaid than it was a mermaid or centaur rather than the true Dragonborn that we know today in D&D.
That's actually pretty different than what I would think of when I think of Dragonborn, especially with those particular names. That almost conjures up the image of dragon, but to think of it as a mermaid and where that came from, that's definitely interesting. Now I'm thinking we should get Rich Howard on here to talk about underwater Ooh. Dragonborn.
That's a great idea. I don't know why there aren't underwater dragonborn, but there need to be.
Yes. So in some of the more modern inspirations, we have a couple of different races from a couple of different popular TV shows. First of all, in the classic Star Trek with James T. Kirk, We have the Gorn. And the Gorn were a dragon-like species introduced in, I think, 1967.
Yes. The classic battle, I think, it looks almost like American Gladiators when they fight each other.
Yeah. Well, you could say that about TNG, too.
True.
I'm showing my nerdiness in that regard. But our next example is from the very first iteration of Doctor Who, not the more recent one, but in the 70s, Doctor Who introduced a species of reptiles and or dragons. They were called the Silurians and the Draconians. So again, taking from that sort of Dracana kind of language. And then finally, in The Land of the Lost, which again is a 1974-ish TV show, lots of stuff came out in the 70s, we have the Sleestak. And I'm not as familiar with them as I am with the other two, but apparently they were also some sort of humanoid or reptile.
Yes. And definitely, because of the time, it's more of that human being the focus because, you know, CG and animatronics and all that stuff at that time was not the greatest, but definitely gives more of that dragon feel, but still not quite getting us there. Mm-mm. So then we head into none other than Dungeons and Dragons.
which is ironic because, you know, it's not like we're dungeon masters or anything.
No, but it's a great place to find inspiration and talk about things, right? No. So the earliest iteration was dragons taking human form. And I think that's really where the idea of somewhere in between got planted with, if they can do that, would they still hold dragon features because they're so powerful and amazing and things like that?
Well, I think it's important to mention that dragons could only take human form. Only good dragons could. So that was kind of the beginning of the idea.
So then from there, it was actually in Dragon issue number 36, which was from April of 1980, where Todd Lockwood, who is an absolutely amazing artist and now a fantastic author. If you don't know who that is, shame on you.
Go look him up.
Yeah. And he had actually created the Crow-Lee, which also, again, have more of that lizard dragonish feel, but still not what we know. We're getting there, though. We're getting there.
Yeah, you can see kind of the progression as things are getting more and more on toward this idea of Dragonborn.
Yeah. Then there were also the Draconians in the Dragonlance setting that started to come out around that same time.
Yep, and those appeared in, I think, the Dragons of Autumn Twilight novel and the Dragons of Despair adventure. So those are kind of where you can go for some source material on that. Dragonkin, which is kind of the next step in this sort of journey, first appeared in Forgotten Realms, and the Defilers of the Dark Sun setting could become dragons over time. So that's actually kind of interesting. Dragonkin that could become dragons over time. So then, you know, in third edition, which is, you know, where I did a majority of my gaming growing up, we have the draconic reskin of kobolds. They kind of got this new look. Instead of being more like a dog, they became more like what you would consider like a lizard folk almost sort of feel, kind of that dragon look. I also remember in 3.5e playing a half dragon, which was a template that was put on a base creature. Yeah, it's super powerful, not necessarily for the faint-hearted DM for sure, but we still didn't really have that sort of dragonborn yet. We had, as the edition went on, draconic creatures and dragon spawn of Tiamat started to appear, and that's where we got kind of the dragon blood subtype.
Yeah, and then from there, we finally get, and this granted was actually really long in the tooth, point for 3.5, but there was a supplement called The Races of Dragon, and it was the first time that the term Dragonborn had been used. But what's interesting with that is that essentially it was only the Dragonborn of Bahamut, and that's it. Done. No different colors. You were just platinum, and then you essentially transcended into that, almost like, you know, in the modern, the super modern reference would be like the Terrigenesis for the Inhumans. You essentially like fell into yourself, created an egg-shaped cocoon, and came out with basically the features of your original race, but you were a dragonborn. So you could have like a dwarf that becomes a dragonborn, an elf that does, and whatever. But essentially, you still had the same kind of physical features of your base race, but were also a platinum dragonborn.
Yeah, and I believe that was either a template or a class, a prestige class that you could take on. I can't remember which. There's been so many different, in 3.5, there are so many different variations on a theme. And there's also a lot of stuff in the Draconomicon, which is another good resource in 3.5. Everything you've ever wanted to know about dragons and half-dragons and quasi-dragons and all that other stuff. The Draconomicon, I hope they redo that soon for 5e, because that's a great book. Where we actually really see Dragonborn kind of sort of to come into existence is fourth edition. And they took a lot of cues from that Dragonborn of Bahamut, as well as other sort of dragon blood creatures from third edition. Like those that came before them, the Dragonborn bear a mystique and a fierceness unique to dragons. They can be strongly affiliated with draconic deities. In fact, in some of the early iterations of 4th ed, which I honestly did not do a lot of playing in, the Dragonborn were called the Dragon Blood. Yeah. I tried it once, didn't like it, went back to 3.5. I did not like 4e. And I know that might alienate some of our listeners, but I did not like it.
We walked a similar road. But like we've said and many others have said, I think it did some fantastic things for the industry as a whole, and especially Dungeons & Dragons. But one of the things it did was also alienate people that had played it for like 20, 30 years.
Yes.
It happens. It was new and exciting. Just too new and exciting.
Yep.
Grognards unite.
Yes.
So yeah, they just didn't want the, you know, and this is just me digging in where there's no actual information that I know of, but yeah, the dragon blood does seem to imply, especially with the sorcerer and everything like that, something different than the dragonborn. Like there's, I mean, just that switch from blood to born really does seem like, no, I'm a dragon person, not someone in my family once had relations with a dragon.
Well, and that's borne out in like the sorcerer's origin of dragon ancestry, I think is what it is. So they have that archetype they can choose. So they kind of preserve some of that dragon blood idea in there and in the sorcerer for 5e. But yeah, I do agree. The dragonborn definitely feels a little bit more complete than just dragon blood, because that was the same thing with half dragon. It really wasn't a race. It was, you know, you were half dragon. So, but the dragonborn are a race. So we get a little bit more laser focused in 5e. So they were born of dragons, as their name suggests. The dragonborn walk proudly through the world that greets them without fear, without any sort of apprehension. They were shaped by the draconic gods or the dragons themselves. And the dragonborn originally hatched from eggs as a unique race. And combining the best attributes of the dragons and the best attributes of humanoids, the dragonborn are faithful servants to true dragons, and others form the rank and file of soldiery in great wars and things of that nature. But they still find themselves sort of adrift with no clear calling in life in 5e, which is what makes them such great adventurers.
So some of the information that we pulled is from all kinds of different sources, because there wasn't a lot in 5th edition.
Yeah, not yet, for sure.
Yeah, one thing that remains true is that and I think it really does harken back to the fact that the original concept was just purely you're from Bahamut or you're not a dragonborn. And so the dragonborn are a very proud race, and like they almost carry this air of not superiority, but like this confidence about them, because they are of dragons, and you know, dragons are a extremely powerful race, and so are the dragonborn. And then of course there's also this draw towards like their heritage. Because now with the modern day version, you can be of all different colors. And it seems very communal that they all stick together in their certain different color groups, which makes sense. I mean, the ice ones with the fire ones, you don't know. Like somebody that turns can get a little hairy. And it also helps that they're super strong in their build, as well as roughly 6.5 feet tall and weighing more than 300 pounds. So it helps that your entire race looks like a linebacker from the NFL.
Right.
Definitely makes you feel more powerful.
Yeah. And, you know, reflecting like true dragons in a sense, they are colored. So you have both the chromatic and the metallic colors, often corresponding to those particular alignments, you know, sort of the evil spectrum for the chromatic dragon, sort of the good spectrum for the metallic dragons. And then, you know, of course, they get a breath weapon, which again adds to that strength and it corresponds to the color that they have and all of that. So with the different colors and stuff, the dragonborns have a very clan-like structure. The clan above self, of course. And they typically, like Neil said, group together with others of their same color, tend to get along with each other more. And so you might see them living, especially like if you have like the chromatic dragons or the metallic dragons, you have them living maybe in close proximity to one another based on those specific categories. But you won't see, I don't think, at least in my line of reasoning, gold dragons and silver dragons living together in one clan structure. Yeah.
I mean, you could definitely see, you know, and of course, a lot of this goes out the window when it's adventurers, you know, and usually they've shirked the clan responsibility in some way, or maybe they're tying back to the clan because they're out on like some sort of mission or something like that. But I would tend to agree that for the most part, you're not going to have a diverse dragonborn community or clan without some sort of very large reasoning. Be that a huge group has been decimated and now these are the remnants and they're like, well, we should probably stick together or our entire race is going to go away. Something like that. But if it's like a healthy population of dragonborn in your world, it's most likely going to be divided up by color, which sounds bad, but it is what it is in D&D.
Yep. So, you know, what's interesting about them is I get a very much of a samurai kind of feel from them in terms of the clans, because they dedicate themselves to masteries of particular skills over their lifetime. They're self-sufficient. They're warriors. I mean, so you can kind of build those sorts of ideas into your dragonborn should you want. The ideas are already there, especially like that dedication to a particular skill. I think is very much a Japanese sort of idea, especially in the samurai eras.
Yeah, definitely. Now that you've said it, like the samurai is such a good analogy. Or the other one would be like knights from a medieval time. Uh-huh. Both those or even some amalgamation of those working together, giving yeah. that honor, that duty to clan above self kind of thing. So with all that kind of out of the way, one of the things we wanted to mention, because it is literally so much information, and granted, it's a little bit specific to a certain type of Dragonborn, but if you wanted to get a full view of how they were set up for 4th edition, you could Google the Ecology of the Dragonborn, and it is a 10-page document purely about that. History, ecology, physiology, psychology, everything you would want to know about how the Dragonborn were set up in 4th edition, you can go check that out.
Well, like we said, there's not a lot out in 5e about the Dragonborn. So a lot of what we're pulling from is in this 4th edition document, which when Neil sent it to me, absolutely blew my mind. There's a lot of detail. There's a lot more in here than we can actually cover in our episode format. So if you guys want to, I would highly recommend that you go check this out because it is really, really cool.
Yeah, it's detailed down into like art that they do, leisure. I mean, yeah. Anything you want for like a full setup, you can check that out. But what we're going to do is kind of talk about some of the different settings that Dragonborn are in, how they were created, and kind of what you could do for your world in terms of putting them into it.
Since we're going to be talking about campaign settings and how the Dragonborns appear in each campaign setting, or some of the more popular ones, we're going to start with Eberron. And in the Eberron campaign setting, the Dragonborn are the descendants of dragons of the lost continent of... Pardon me as I probably butcher this. Argonessen?
Well, I'm sorry, Keith Baker. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Argonessen? If that's not what it is, Keith Baker, please let me know if you're listening.
Yeah, we'll have you come on the show and then you can talk about it. It'll yes. be fine.
And they lived there in isolation for a long time, since before Kaveri's founding. So that's sort of the information that we have on at least the Eberron campaign setting.
Yeah, which is an interesting thing because, and this could work for both Dragonborn or anything else, because you could have it established in your world that there aren't, and then you could change it to there aren't yet.
Yeah. Yeah, Dragonborn don't exist in my world, but I could easily fit if somebody wanted to play one or somebody persuaded me to let them be in my world. You could definitely use that lost continent idea. I think that's actually a really cool way to bring it in.
I mean, because if you think of how much of even our world was unexplored, truly unexplored for so long, and then most of these settings are medieval in nature, and yes, there is magic, but usually, I mean, there's always another continent. Like, you can always make that happen in your world. So I think it's a really interesting way to go from them not being there to all of a sudden there are Dragonborn. And now what happens? What does that mean?
And suddenly there was a world war. Yes.
Ah,
that would be excellent. That was such a good story right there.
So speaking of magic, we're going to head over to Dark Sun and find out that Dragonborn were actually created from humans by the Sorcerer King Dregoth and referred to themselves as Dre. So yeah, so you have this wizard that's created the race, but then Rich Baker stepped in and actually described a set of Dre that were all about magic and money. And those are the ones that are actually more indoctrinated into the rest of the population because they're trying to swindle and move their way around and do everything. But the original creation was magic, which I assume that's how a lot of things happen in this world, because I do not believe that owlbears were a natural occurrence.
No, not at all. Absolutely not. No, that was some spell gone horribly wrong. Yes, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
So moving on from Dark Sun into Dragonlance, there is this article, and I love this title of the article, from Dragon Magazine number 421. You say Dragonborn?
I say Draconian.
Yeah. March 2013 ties back into Dragonlance campaign setting using the Draconians race. The connection was repeated in the 5th edition player's handbook, which is also good to know. Draconians are also called dragon men, and they are humanoid beings with dragon-like features during the War of the Lance, which is one of my favorite battles. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun, War of the Lance. They were originally made in eggs of good dragons that have been corrupted with dark magic. So that proposes some interesting questions because there's magic there again. During the era, the Draconians served as assault troops and special forces for the dragon armies of Takhisis.
So then after that, though, some of the eggs were also found to contain female Draconians, and those were hatched and essentially that set of female Draconians is what helped to establish the race. And they're split into five principal races. And then there are also actually noble Draconians, which are formed from the eggs of evil dragons that have been, I assume, I don't want to say corrupted, but blessed maybe would be the right
word.
Yeah,
I would say blessed, like, yeah.
Good magic.
So does that mean then that they're flipped? So the chromatic dragons are now the good ones and the metallic dragons are now the evil ones? That blows my mind.
Oh, that would be really difficult. Yep.
That would hurt my brain a little bit. Yeah.
So last up, we are going to head to none other than the Forgotten Realms, because that's kind of, you know, the main setting for Dungeons & Dragons these days.
My favorite setting of all time, except for, you know, Homebrew World, but, you know.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. So the Dragonborn came from Abir, which is actually the lost sibling world of Toril, which that's where Faerun is. The Dragonborn mainly inhabit the militarized kingdom of Timanthar. Many live in Return to Beer, which is the continent that has replaced Muztika as a result of the spell plague. And in the Forgotten Realms, the Dragonborn actually have a deep hatred for true dragons because in their previous world, they fought terrible wars against...
Yeah, I wonder what happened there.
I don't know.
Overthrow of the evil overlords, maybe?
Ooh, hopefully.
So what we like to do is we like to, when we do racial profiling episodes, is to kind of talk about how we would use Dragonborn in our worlds as a race. And what I want to do is I really like this idea that Eberron had, because again, in my, like I said, in my homebrew world of Alterra, I don't have Dragonborn. And so if a player wanted to play a Dragonborn character, I don't want to necessarily say no, but I'd have to figure out how, where they came from. And so if you want to use the idea of a lost continent is really cool, because, you know, like we said, it's medieval, you know, even maybe heading on toward kind of the Renaissance time period in a lot of these worlds. And so you have explorers like Marco Polo or, you know, whoever, who could be going out and exploring, and all of a sudden they run into this race of Dragonborn, you know, so lived in isolation, you know, very much that kind of Japanese Asian sort of, we're shutting ourselves off from outside influence to keep ourselves pure. So you could have kind of that xenophobia going on with the Dragonborn, which could lead to some interesting things. Or the other idea that just popped into my head is interdimensional mashup of worlds. So the Dragonborns aren't from your world's plane of existence, but some sort of magic went awry on either your world or their world, and all of a sudden now two dimensions are smashed together, and now you have to deal with the race that necessarily wasn't on your world in the first place.
I like it, because that's kind of a mix of the Dark Sun and the Forgotten Realms idea, where the Return to Beer is essentially taking over where Muztika, the setting, used to be. And now it's just like, well, that's not there anymore. This is here instead.
Yeah.
Dude, I really like that. Well, I also thought, I immediately thought of a cool backstory for a character potentially. So you have, you know, this Marco Polo, Columbus, other explorers that I don't remember because I haven't been in school for a long time. The, that Viking guy, the Leif Erikson.
Yep.
Hey. Dang. Good job, us. I work at a school. I just don't go here. The idea of them bringing a Dragonborn or some Dragonborn back with them, and the player being either, you know, depending on how you want it to set up, and of course how they want to set up, either they're like an escaped prisoner that's now in this new world, or they're just a group from the Dragonborn race that were like, oh, we didn't know that this existed. We need to go find out what that is and who these people are. Almost like reverse explorers. Like a group coming back with whoever found them and then like going out into the world to learn about it, to go back and take that information to their people.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I like that kind of reverse exploration motif. If you guys haven't read this series of books yet, I would highly encourage you to read it. It's called The Codex Alera by Jim Butcher. And he's got another idea that I think you could borrow from. There's this race of wolf creatures called the Karnim who only send ambassadors to the main country. So that's all the interaction they have with them, and that the humans in this story have with the Karnim. And so, you know, eventually they have to go to Karnaea, which is where these Karnim are from, and help the Karnim, who are very secretive, who don't like humans on their continent, and all that kind of stuff. So you could do that same sort of idea with the Dragonborn, where there are you know, you have an embassy or, you know, contacts and things like that. And, you know, they don't ever let anybody go to their continent. They're known of, and, you know, they're restricted in the areas that they can go. But, you know, if your player wants to play a Dragonborn character, you could have him be a part of this embassy and be sent on a special mission, get a special dispensation from the other Dragonborn to go out and sort of, you know, explore the culture, the world beyond the embassy to which they are restricted.
Yeah. Obviously, depending on how your DM style goes, you're going to, and depending on how you choose for the Dragonborn to be in your world, you get to deal with potentially a lot of the same stuff that drow deal with.
Yep.
Is another thing. So it would be nice to kind of use these ideas that we have so that at the very least, the Dragonborn is just like along for the ride, like really wants to be an adventurer. But You could also make it that they are trying to like fight their way through being ostracized in this new world.
Yep.
And too much good stuff.
So much good.
So once you've kind of figured out where the Dragonborn come from and how they entered your world, I think one of the next decisions that you get to make as someone creating the world is which dragons or dragon types get to be Dragonborn, which I think is a really cool thing because you can be as restrictive as that late 3.5 version where it's Bahamut. That's it.
Only Platinum, yeah.
Or you could just be going more of that 5th edition style where it's kind of the classics, the black, red, blue, silver, gold, and these are the ones you kind of work with. Obviously, the next option is it's all fair game. You got a crazy dragon and you want to make a Dragonborn? Let's talk about it. Like one of the craziest ones I can think of right now is out of the Tome of Beast from Kobold Press. There's the Void Dragon.
Dude, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, like when you look at it, it almost looks like you're looking into like a galaxy. And you could have that be potentially a Dragonborn.
Huh.
Because in a lot of ways, aesthetically, you could present them however you want, as long as mechanically you make that breath weapon roughly similar to the ones that are already there. There's a lot of, I feel like, creative freedom with your ability to choose which types of dragons you want to indoctrinate into your world.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, along with that same idea of color, you know, are the Dragonborn in your world good or are they evil? You know, if they're an evil conquering race, say like, again, with that interdimensional idea, you have something along the lines of another race that we have done on here, the Githyanki or the Githzerai, who are kind of those space pirates. You have the Dragonborn who are traveling dimensions and conquering worlds. So then you can have, you know, you're evil if you're playing an evil campaign, you know. So there are different things that you can do there. And in 5e, there are a bunch of different energy types that don't have a dragon that correspond to them. I mean, how cool would it be to see a dragon with a necrotic breath weapon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
So you'd have to make him like a gray dragon or something.
He looks undead. I mean, because that made me think of World of Warcraft, where you have the Forsaken that you have to play as.
Yeah.
Dude, that's super cool. Or even you could go like the Super Paladin route and they're doing radiant damage of some kind.
Yeah, you could definitely do that because, I mean, with the metallic dragons, I mean, you have ice, you have fire, you have lightning. I mean, you have these other different ones, you know, kind of mirroring on the chromatic side. But, you know, there's all those different, I think even in the Draconomicon from 3.5, you had people who were doing holy and unholy damage is what they called it in that edition. So you have that as a precedent to go back to for all kinds of good ideas. Yeah, there's so much about Dragonborn because there's so much about dragons because it's in the name. I mean, it's Dungeons and Dragons. So, of course, they're going to have tons of information on dragons that you could then apply to Dragonborn.
Definitely.
Well, that's all we have for you today on Dragonborn. We hope you have enjoyed our talk about this, and we hope that we've given you a lot of inspiration on this particular topic. And if you have liked what you've heard and you want to include Dragonborn in your world now that you've heard about it or you have questions, feel free to contact us. And Neil, how would they get a hold of us?
You can always email us at dungeonmasterblock@gmail.com. And we love getting those emails and we try and respond to them as much as possible. Now that there's three of us in there, we try and get in and make sure to get every email that we receive a response.
Yeah.
And then like DME and said, if you do like us, another great thing to do would be to head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review if you like us that much. And of course, we'll read it on air and that just helps us get in front of more people, get more inspiration and create a larger and more awesome community.
Yeah. If you guys want to follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook, you can find some great memes that we'll put up a few different polls over time, you know, just general D&D conversation. Also information on upcoming episodes whenever they drop. There's information for you to find there, and you can also connect with other DMs. It's also a great place to get a hold of either Mitch or Neil or myself. We also have our own Twitters that are linked on there, so if you guys would like to hit us up on Twitter or on Facebook, those are also good mediums to contact us through. We also have a Patreon Dragon shout out for the week, and this one's a little different than ones we've done before because we don't have a last name.
So this Patreon Dragon shout out of the week goes to
Justin.
Yeah. And he is none other than a feared and fearsome gold dragon. So thank you very much, Justin, for your support and helping us give all of the awesome content that we do to everyone. Yeah. You have made that possible.
Yes, we thank you, Justin. So this show is a proud member of the Block Party Podcast Network. Check out other shows like The GM Showcase, Geek Wars, We're So Bad at Adventuring, and more. Well, that's all we have for you from the Dungeon Masters block, the place where we focus on the Dungeon Master, the most important person in the game, the only person capable of playing God,
killing characters,
and lowering the ego of all other people at the table. This is Dungeon Master Ian saying we'll see you next week on the Dungeon Masters block.
Good night and good luck. Described. Wait. Let's make sure.
Why don't you, if you want to, no, because I skipped that one line.
There. Lost my mind.
Goodbye.